Chapter 56. Spirit of the Pities, Napoleon looks content, nay, shines with joy. Spirit of the Years, yet see it pass, as by a conjurer's wand. Thereupon Napoleon's face blackens, as if the shadow of a winter night had fallen upon it. Resentful and threatening, he stops the procession and looks up and down the benches. Spirit sinister, this is sound artistry of the imminent will. It relieves the monotony of so much good humor. Napoleon, to the chapel master, where are the cardinals? And why not here? He speaks so loud that he is heard throughout the gallery. Abdoprat, trembling, many are present here, your majesty, but some are feebled by infirmities too common to their age, and cannot come. Napoleon, tell me no nonsense. Half absent themselves, because they will not come. The factious fools. Well, be it so. But they shall flinch for it. Marie-Louise looks frightened. The procession moves on. Spirit of the Pities, I seem to see the thin and headless ghost of the yet earlier Austrian, here too, queen, walking beside the bride, with frail attempts to pluck her by the arm. Spirit of the Years, nay, think not so. No trump unseals earth's sepulchres today. We are the only phantoms now abroad on this mud-molded ball. Through 16 years as he has decayed in a back garden yonder, dust all the showance time retains of her, senseless of hustlings in her former house, lost to all count of crowns and bedallery even of her Austrian blood. No. What thou seest springs of the quavering fancy, stirred to dreams by yon tart phantom's phrase. Marie-Louise, sadly to Napoleon, I know not why, I love not this day's doings half so well as our quaint meeting time at Compiègne. A clammy air creeps round me, as from vaults peopled with looming specters, chilling me and angering you withal. Napoleon, oh, it is not to trouble you. Merely, my cherished one, those devils of Italian cardinals. Now I'll be bright as ever you must too. Marie-Louise, I'll try. Reaching the entrance to the salon care amidst strains of music the Emperor and Empress are received, and incensed by the Cardinal Grand Almoners. They take their seats under the canopy, and the train of notabilities seat themselves further back, the persons in waiting stopping behind the imperial chairs. The ceremony of the religious marriage now begins. The choir intones a hymn, the Emperor and Empress go to the altar, remove their gloves, and make their vows. Spirit ironic, the English Church should return thanks for this wedding, seeing how it will purge of coarseness the picture sheets of that artistic nation, which will hardly be able to caricature the new wife as it did poor plebeian Josephine. Such starched and ironed monarchists cannot sneer at a woman of such a divinely dry and crusted line like the Habsburgs. Mass is next celebrated, after which the Te Deum is chanted in harmonies that whirl round the walls of the salon care and quiver down the long gallery. The procession then reforms and returns, amid the flutterings and applause of the dense assembly. But Napoleon's face has not lost the somber expression which settled on it. The pair and their train pass out by the west door, and the congregation disperses in the other direction, the cloud curtain closing over the scene as they disappear. Act 6, Scene I, the lines of Torres Vedras, a bird's eye perspective is revealed of the peninsular tract of Portuguese territory lying between the shining pool of the Tagus on the east, and the white-frilled Atlantic lifting rhythmically on the west. As thus beheld, the tract features itself somewhat like a late Gothic shield, the upper edge from the dexter to the sinister chief being the lines of Torres Vedras, stretching across from the mouth of the Zazamba on the left to Alhandra on the right, and the souther base point being Fort S. Julian. The roofs of Lisbon appear at the sinister base, and in a corresponding spot on the opposite side Cape Roca. It is perceived in a moment that the northern verge of this nearly coast-hemmed region is the only one through which access can be gained to it by land, and a close scrutiny of the boundary there reveals that means are being adopted to effectually prevent such access. From east to west along it runs a chain of defenses, dotted at intervals by dozens of circular and square redoubts, either made or in the making, two of the latter being of enormous size. Between these stretch unclimbable escarpments, stone walls, and other breastworks, and in front of all a double row of abatis, formed of the limbs of trees. Within the outer line of defense is a second, constructed on the same shield-shaped tract of country, and is not more than a twelfth of the length of the others. It is a continuous entrenchment of ditches and ramparts, and its object, that of covering a forced embarkation, is rendered apparent by some rocking English transports off the shore hard by.
Dumb show, innumerable human figures are busying themselves like cheese mites all along the northernmost frontage, undercutting easy slopes into steep ones, digging ditches, piling stones, felling trees, dragging them, and interlacing them along the front as required. On the second breastwork, which is completed, only a few figures move. On the third breastwork, which is fully matured and equipped, minute red sentinels creep backwards and forwards noiselessly. As time passes, three reddish-gray streams of marching men loom out to the north, advancing southward along three roads towards three diverse points in the first defense. These form the English army, entering the lines for shelter. Looked down upon, their motion seems peristaltic and vermicular, like that of three caterpillars. The division on the left is under Picton, in the center under Leith and Cole, and on the extreme right, by Alhandra, under Hill. Beside one of the roads, two or three of the soldiers are dangling from a tree by the neck, probably for plundering. The dumb show ends, and the point of view sinks to the earth. Scene 2, the same. Outside the lines, the winter day has gloomed to a stormful evening, and the road outside the first line of defense forms the foreground of the stage. Enter in the dusk from the hills to the north of the entrenchment, near Calandrix, a group of horsemen, which includes Messina in command of the French forces, Foy, Loyson, and other officers of his staff. They ride forward in the twilight and tempest, and reconnoiter, till they see against the sky the ramparts blocking the road they pursue. They halt silently. Messina, puzzled, endeavors with his glass to make out the obstacle.
Messina, something stands here to peril our advance, or even prevent it.
Foy, these are the English lines, their outer horns and tusks whereof I spoke, constructed by Lord Wellington of late to keep his foothold firm in Portugal.
Messina, thrusts he his burly, boss disfigurements so far to north as this? I had pictured me to lay much nearer Lisbon. Little strange Lord Wellington rode placid at Busaco with this behind his back. Well, it is hard, but that we turn them somewhere, I assume? They scarce can close up every southward gap between the Tagus and the Atlantic Sea.
Foy, I hold they can, and do, although, no doubt, by searching we shall spy some raggedness which custom skill may force.
Messina, plain 'tis, no less, we may heap corpses vainly hereabout, and crack good bones in waste. By human power this passes mounting. What say you's behind?
Loyson, another line exactly like the first, but more matured. Behind its back a third.
Messina, how long have these prim ponderosities been rearing up their foreheads to the moon?
Loyson, some months in all. I know not quite how long. They are Lord Wellington's select device, and, like him, heavy, slow, laborious, sure.
Messina, may he enjoy their sureness. He deserves to. I had no inkling of such barriers here. A good road runs along their front, it seems, which offers us advantage.
What a night.
The tempest cries dismally about the earthworks above them, as the reconnoiterers linger in the slight shelter the lower ground affords. They are about to turn back. Enter from the crossroad to the right Junot and some more officers. They come up with a signal that the others are those they lately parted from.
Junot, we have ridden along as far as Calandrix, favored there by this disordered night, which tongues its language to the disguise of ours, and find amid the veil an open route that, well maneuvered, may be practicable.
Messina, I'll look now at it, while the weather aids. If it may serve our end,
when all's prepared so good. If not, some other to the west.
Exeunt Massena, Junot, Loyson, Foy, and the rest by the paved crossway to the right. The wind continues to prevail as the spot is left desolate, the darkness increases, rain descends more heavily, and the scene is blotted out.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.